Hello once again. Boomer Tech Radio is the name of this program. The name of your host is Bob Belongi.
And Brenda Belongi.
Analog living in a digital world live.
I always sound so much flatter than you do. And I don't know where you get that radio enthusiasm.
Oh, welcome to the program with goodies, gadgets, gizmos, tech news you can use. Merry Christmas. That's right, we're not afraid to say that on this show.
I sort of feel like that robot in Hitchhiker's Guide to the Galaxy. Oh,
you're
fine.
You have a fan base. Hey, we are live here at KCNR 1460, 530-605-4567. Let it ring. Because your host is also your producer, is also your phone screener,
Nobologist.
Is also your engineer.
Oh, you can do it all,
yeah,
dear.
Well, yes, indeed. It's a shoestring operation for nearly 7 years. Can you believe that? We took to the air January of 2010, for nearly 8 years then.
We'll be starting our ninth year next year.
Yeah, okay.
Almost 8 years.
Yeah.
Almost eight years.
Yeah, coming up on 8 years.
Yeah, I mean, if you count the whole 10, 11, 12, 13,
14.
The 0-year
counts, yeah.
16, 17. Yeah, we're closing out 8 years now.
Wow. The show has evolved.
You know, and we're kind of proud of the fact that there have not been many repeats where we've had to let it roll, as we say, and repeat the last week or play an archive show. We actually haven't done much of that.
No, we haven't, and that's something that we are somewhat proud of. By the way, you want to contact us here at the show, boomertechradio@gmail.com, or you can leave a comment on our website at boomertechradio.com. That is the place where you can download past episodes, or you can go the podcast route by going through the iTunes Store, Stitcher, or Google Play. So you got lots of options for listening to this show. If you have missed, also go to kcnr1460.com/archives to find past episodes
right.
of this program.
A lot of this is fairly perishable since we deal with the tech news you can use.
Yeah.
And it's, you know, changes every week. It's just like any other news, but there's recurring themes and new stuff and changes in old stuff. And so we try to bring up to keep things in people's eyes or mind in front of them as to what's important.
How many times have you and I heard somebody say, love your show, even if we have no idea what the hell you're talking about?
I know, that's weird. How can you like a show if you don't understand what's being presented?
We try.
That seems illogical to
There's
me.
There's a line we have to walk because this stuff can be complicated.
It is complicated.
And we try not to dumb it down too much. Because that does a disservice to the content, and it insults our listeners. But if you have a specific question, you can, of course, always reach out, boomertechradio@gmail.com, or leave a comment in the chat room. I'll be bringing that up here at KCNR momentarily. Now, mind you, I'm tracking 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7, 8 screens as I do this program. So if I don't 9 screens, if you want to count Brenda's tablet. So if I miss something, please, you know, either call or send in a comment or email, because the email pops up instantly on my iPad tablet. Speaking of tablets, consumer alert, consumer alert.
This is definitely tech news you can use.
Yes, this came to light after we did last week's show. And I go, wow, I should have put, because we've been pushing, telling people to buy the Amazon Fire tablet, whether it be the Fire 7, the HD 8, or the 10, one of those tablets. And they're very popular. They're relatively cheap. If you're in the Amazon ecosystem, they're a great bargain. However, if you Amazon as a way of making it convenient for you, if you order an Amazon tablet or probably also a Fire Stick or a Fire TV on your account, the device comes pre-registered to your account.
Unless
you check a box on the order form that says, I am buying this as a gift.
Right. So look at that very carefully. Yep.
If you have already purchased a Fire device for a loved one, probably that may count on an Alexa too. on an Echo. So you may want to check that. The problem is, when that device comes, and it's pre-registered, and let's say you're giving one to your 12-year-old cousin, who promptly starts downloading everything in the Amazon Music Library.
Guess what?
Who gets the
bill?
The registered owner.
Right. So, if you're sending this off across the country or somewhere, not to worry, actually. There is a pretty ready fix for this.
What you want to do is go is either contact Amazon customer service, which may be difficult this time of year, and have them reset the tablet remotely. Or if you have your if you can get your hands on the tablet, maybe carefully unwrap it or whatever, go into the settings, and on an Amazon Fire, most Android devices, you do that by putting your finger at the top of the screen and pulling downwards like you're dropping a window shade. This opens the settings. Go into the settings, probably in About This Device, and do a full factory reset. The device will pretend it just came out of the box and had never been touched before, and will you can enter now the new owner's name and all that and set up an Amazon account. Maybe you want a, an account linked to your gift recipient's parents, because you have to be, like, I think over 16 to have a, an Amazon account.
So if you're sending this off to a young person who, you know, you don't want to be on your account, then get a hold of the parents or tell them, look, in order to do that. So there is a fix around for that, but it's a whole lot easier if you do check that box as you order
save
it
yourself
that says, save yourself the hassle.
Don't wait for the first $800 bill from Amazon Music to show up
or
every
the,
episode
the
of
movies, yes.
Yeah, every episode of Mighty Morphin Power Rangers or something.
Right, yeah. So just be careful with that. And these darn devices, you know, they're somewhat complicated in a lot of ways. They do require some maintenance and some care of use. But, of course, we can't live without them now.
Yep.
At least we think we can't.
Talk about that later on in the show. Couple of big headlines. Oh, end of an era. Rest in peace, AOL Instant Messenger.
Oh, my goodness.
The plug was pulled. The patient perished. There was a time when AOL Instant Messenger.
Oh, that was king.
They defined
queen.
Instant messaging.
Yes, that was. You just weren't anybody unless you had that.
Yeah, so it became the de facto communications method. AOL started life as a built-in chat application for America Online. You've got mail. Welcome. Goodbye.
That's right. You do those so well.
Yeah.
You must have spent a fair time on AOL.
Well. And everybody you bought any magazine, including stuff they had nothing to do with tech, you got that stupid floppy disk.
Oh, they
I had a whole collection of AOL floppy disks.
They sent it to you in the mail, unsolicited.
Oh, yeah. And once you had an account, you couldn't get rid of the damn thing, especially when they tied in, when AOL tied in with AT&T, and then Yahoo got into the act. It was insidious. AOL, of course, is now called Oath. The messenger spun out as a very own app in 97. The little yellow running guy became an icon. Now, of course, Facebook Messenger, Snapchat, and all that have become the messaging of choice. I will say, however, I do have a Facebook Instant Messenger. We're using it in a family setting to keep everybody updated on a family health issue. Don't spam me on my Instant Messenger. You will be taken out. I will hit that button so fast if you spam me with your... And I don't care how important... I understand the cause is important, and this is just the most vital thing to you. But don't interfere with my IM, with my instant messaging, with your stuff.
Yep.
It's rude.
Well,
it's unsolicited.
That's... The great thing about Messenger, though, is you can terminate that connection.
Yeah. So, rest in peace, AOL Instant Messenger. It was a part of the early days of the internet. So, as you have heard, doom and gloom. It's over. The corporate evil has struck. The drama regarding the FCC net neutrality vote is amazing. We're going to try to parse through some of the stuff, some of the histrionics, some of the practical things, and try to give it a little bit of a
perspective
to the net neutrality vote. But there are people who think, oh, it's all over. How many times have you heard this?
Well, yeah.
That some step is taken and, oh, it's all over. We're all going to die, you know. Yeah. Or we're all not going to be able to do anything. They're going to take it all away from us.
Well, the thing is, we're all in the same boat.
Yeah.
And so there, it's not like at this point in the game that there's any special group or people, you know, being picked on.
Yeah. So moments,
we're all in the same boat.
Moments before the net neutrality vote, and this is how far off the rails this thing has gotten, the hearing room had to be evacuated. Get this, as their security people there at the FCC said that they had a credible thing going on and cleared the room, sent in dogs. Everyone had to leave their belongings behind.
One's going to guess that it's a bomb threat in that case.
Dogs were called in to search. Reporters said they were ushered into a hallway outside the meeting room as the security personnel looked over the meeting room shortly before the 3-2 vote to roll back.
It's like, really, people?
Yeah. Roll back internet.
Net neutrality didn't exist before.
Yeah.
It got put in place. It's been taken away. It can be put back in place. We'll see how this goes. That isn't to say that I'm for the lack of net neutrality. That isn't what I mean. It's not that this is a permanent thing.
Yeah. This is only in place until another FCC commission steps in.
Who knows, really, how this is going to go? People act like this is how things are going to be forever. The internet, what's the next thing coming along? You know, how we get internet even might change. Or there's... technology moves so fast that I wouldn't be too upset by this from the point of view that you're not stuck with it forever, I'm quite sure.
And let's clarify, this is not the whole of the internet
that
is affected by these so-called net neutrality rules. It's only because the whole of the internet is a vast network that is redundant of interconnected server farms, basically. What is being affected is what's called the last mile. That is what you are paying for when you send your bill off to AT&T, Verizon, Charter, Comcast, whoever. That is the internet off-ramp, if you will, into your house, whether it's on a pair of twisted copper wires, whether it is on a coaxial cable along with your TV service, which is very popular, or over a wireless cell connection, that is what is being affected by net neutrality. And in a nutshell, what the rules now say is that the service provider has discretion to deliver service. But the policy also says that their practices, performance, and commercial terms have to be transparent.
Have to be disclosed to you as a consumer. So I think what's going to happen with this, because they can't just do something and you have no control, which is true, but you can vote with your dollars, because there's going to be people who don't appreciate say like a cable service where the price goes up all the time, you get lousy service, you're forced to buy some kind of bundled package or what have you. This is one of the allegations of the loss of this net neutrality, is that now the internet service providers or ISPs can package things for you and you can buy different levels of service.
Here's my prediction.
Which you already kind of do if you have a business line. You already have that with DSL, for instance. You buy speed.
Here's my prediction. This is going to spark a competition that will result in a cellular type, pole-to-pole, pole-to-house distribution network on wireless frequencies. New frequencies are being opened up by the FCC by reallocating certain television channels over to new wireless services. So these low power transmitters that they're just powerful enough to reach to the next pole, or powerful enough to reach from the pole to your house, and can be scaled up as time requires. Because just about anybody who's got, you know, AC power in their house, there's a line of poles coming out to your place, right? In fact, if you're living off-grid, you have to pay a small fortune to get that get those wires out. But that's a pretty small percentage of the population. But what I'm seeing is that competition will give rise to these wireless link companies. Now, for the better part, when we got really upset with our you remember about a year ago, Brenda, we were really mad with our DSL service because it was awful. And
yes.
AT&T was pulling back from it. But we couldn't get the new service
right
at our house.
Right.
So we went with a local-owned provider of internet service who had a tie-in to a fiber optic, and then that last mile was a wireless transmitter receiver unit. The technician, a guy named Guy, came out to our house, put a little device up on our roof that he was able to reach up to a mountaintop and have a wireless link, and it worked great.
Yeah, it worked very well.
Yeah. About a year into it, AT&T came along with their Spectrum service. Or no, that's Charter. What is the AT&T wireless? U-verse. AT&T came along with their U-verse service because they had upgraded the wiring.
Finally.
Yeah, they had upgraded our wiring to the point where they could make that work, and we use that. But for people who are in some specific locations, wireless services make a lot of sense. There's some Wi-Fi services, which have been around for a long time, longer than this show even, what's called WiMAX, which have, you remember when we played around with Clearwire for a time?
Yeah. Line of sight.
Under the right circumstances, Clearwire worked pretty good, and it was a mobile solution when it was, before cell phones could give you a wireless connection.
Mm-hmm.
When it worked, it was fine, but the upload speeds were awful. You were getting like dial-up or less upload speed, and download was very spotty because it depended on the number of people who were tied into a node. If you had a lot of people in a neighborhood who were tied into that wireless node, your traffic speed dived. Also, what we discovered is that the Clearwire, remember Vonage? The voice over IP, you got the little dongle with the headset, and you could plug in.
Like Magic Jack or
whatever.
Yeah,
it was similar to a Magic Jack, and Clearwire blocked that service. This was before the net neutrality rules kicked in. So this is kind of the candy that some people are crying about, is that at their discretion, a website or a service provider may choose to limit traffic or in some cases block traffic from certain websites.
Right. Or provide other,
Do they other want services to put up with the backlash when they do that?
That's a very good question.
Yeah.
It's going to be interesting. The thing that is interesting when you read a lot of these articles about people that are anti, that were against, I should say, getting rid of net neutrality, is there's a little bit of whining in it to me, is that, well, these companies are making no commitment to not do this. Of course not.
Yeah.
There's, you know, follow the money.
Yeah.
If they see a way to get revenue on this and they say, oh, nobody does this, that's baloney. Our DSL lines at the time we had them, you pay for different levels of speed.
Yeah.
And that's the same thing as what they're talking about.
Which
here
is never close to what
it's never close to what they say. Yeah, it's so true. So none of the current, you know, folks, Comcast, T-Mobile, Verizon, AT&T, Sprint, Charter, Spectrum, same thing. Optimum, Suddenlink, all of the Cox Cable, you name it. None of them are promising to not engage in tiered service.
Well, and this is unlike anything.
But that doesn't mean they're going to do it, which they probably – well, they're trying to figure out how to do it. They've probably been thinking about this for a while. And they've been forced to toe the mark in net neutrality. So, of course, present day stuff is, you know, has no current policy of blah, blah. But these companies have a plan. It'll be interesting to see what comes out because it is very competitive.
Mm-hmm.
People are having had net neutrality really are not going to be thrilled about something that puts a serious crimp on their normal everyday activities.
So let's come up with a scenario here. Let us suppose that – so if you're getting your movies from both Netflix, as we are, Netflix and
Amazon or Hulu or whatever.
From both Netflix and Hulu and Amazon.
Right.
Okay. Let's say those are the big three. And you're getting your service through Charter.
Right.
Charter also maybe decides, as Comcast has, offer its own movie channel. And the concern is that these other guys, and especially small companies that are trying to get started up, might suffer less quality of service than the premium company. This is sort of like Google AdWords, you know, where if you pay the fee, your ads get pushed to the top.
I'm a little more concerned about Disney buying Murdoch's empire because now they control a whole bunch of stuff and Disney does not have a good track record of sharing out, you know, it's all about getting you to buy something.
Yeah.
So it's a little frustrating.
Yeah. And what if Disney cuts a deal with all the major cable companies
right.
and say, we will pay you X amount of dollars. You push our content out ahead of everybody else. Give us the HOV lane on the internet
right,
freeway.
Right.
And keep these other guys out.
And that's true of any. You know, Netflix could do the same thing. Hulu could do the same thing. Amazon could do the same thing. And so you're sort of forced into something that you don't necessarily want. It's not unlike why you had to have cable bundles because there were licensing things and blah, blah, blah. So this is going to be very interesting to see how it turns out.
Okay, the other analogy I want to draw is, do you remember the movie Tucker about the guy with the car?
Yeah.
And what happened is that this guy, Preston Tucker, came up with a car that was way ahead of its time in terms of its advanced engineering. And the other established car companies stepped all over
him.
Yeah, they crowded
him
out.
Yep.
By the same token, when YouTube went from a place to post your own funny videos to a major commercial money-making enterprise under Google, small content providers got marginalized. But they're still hanging in there. Now, you have to dig in some cases. You have to know what you're looking for because the paying content gets pushed to the top of the stack. And now they're offering, of course, YouTube Red, where if you want the really premium content, you got to pony up or you put up with the ads.
Right.
So net neutrality, two-edged sword. But I'm thinking that there is an opportunity here for people to develop and sell high-quality last mile wired scalable systems. Of course, you got to go through all the environmental stuff and things like that, but I think that it will spark some innovation. People always come up with ways to innovate around regulations.
Right, absolutely. It's always changing.
Coming up on, can you believe we're at the bottom of the hour already? Boomer Tech Radio. I'm Bob.
No.
I'm Bob. She's Brenda. More tech news you can use as we broadcast live here at KCNR. We'll tell you how to reach us right after these messages. Back with Boomer Tech Radio, Bob Belongi here, along with Brenda Belongi, and the tech news that you can use live today from the sumptuous studios of KCNR Shasta Redding. 530-605-4560. I just opened up the chat room, and our friend Rover from Las Vegas? Yeah, is on the line
or somewhere
there.
Down
I will
there.
Look back and see what he has to say. Brenda has a couple of stories, but I wanted to lead off this segment. This is almost like something you would have to read in The Onion. A Nigerian man has been jailed for his role in a global email scam. He's the one that's been sending that out for 20 years?
Seriously? I'm being sarcastic.
I need you to handle this money for me. Well, this wasn't quite that email scam. By the way, somebody here in Reading fell for that last year.
That's so sad.
$10,000.
That's really, really sad. That is just so sad.
Quick theme, yes. In this case, the scammer's targets included an unnamed New York investment firm. The suspect or the criminal tricked victims into wiring more than, get this, $25 million into bank accounts he opened in China. It is going to be difficult for victims in the United States to recover those funds. The Nigerian's role mostly was setting up the accounts. The fraud took place by emails impersonating executives or vendors of companies that directed employees to make large wire transfers. Such scams are known as business email compromise. So somebody says, pursuant to invoice number, blah, 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 transfer X number of dollars into account Y. And the non-thinking drone.
Right. If you have an accounts receivable account, and this is why there needs to be checks and balances the system. It's really amazing.
The scams took place from 2014 to 2016 and were usually in about $25,000 amounts.
You got a little greedy.
Yeah,
you got greedy. You know, if you got a few million bucks, you can put that to work and live very comfortably, particularly in, less costly countries. And if you can pull it off and not get caught, take your money and run and then shut her down. How are they going to ever find you? But this $25 million, I guess, thought wasn't going to get caught or something like that, right?
Yeah. So, hey, if you want to vicariously check in on and make some comments, and you're too shy to pick up the phone and give us your voice, of course, you can stop into the KCNR 1460 chat room. Go to kcnr1460.com, click on Listen and Chat. You can hear the stream in case maybe your radio reception is a little dodgy. You can also do this on your mobile device. But if you're in the chat room, you can comment and see some comments. But our friend Rover is saving up and entering some contests to try to get a 3D printer.
Oh, wow.
That's fun.
Yeah.
3D printing, of course, is advancing rapidly. Now there are technologies that are enabling us to make certain types of metallic parts, which is real big for manufacturing, rather than soft, meltable plastic. We saw some of that a couple of years ago where companies were working on like a sintered bronze product that it would make the matrix and then expose it to either ultraviolet or even X-ray, and then it would harden up like an epoxy composite. So,
It's going to be interesting to see how 3D printing affects the design of some things. I mean, not only can do you want, design and then have a way to manufacture it, but how about this is manufacturing capability? How is that going to affect design?
Yep. Mod.
Because materials are a big deal.
Manufacture on demand. And if there's a change in the design of something, in other words, you discover, let's say you produce 10,000 gears for a particular application. It is discovered that there is a flaw in that gear design. You have to throw out 10,000 pieces of expensive material and start all over.
Exactly.
Whereas if you are making them on demand and as needed, we need to make a change to this line of code so that this change goes into the print. Now you haven't wasted all that material.
The flip side of that is we ran into this one time with a printer at work where there had been a subtle design change in the cartridges, the something inside and whatever. And so while the part that we got was supposed to be compatible with that particular older printer, it was not. Something was not quite lined up right, and we tried three different times to get that fixed. The replacement is flawed. So you send that back and get another one. No, the same thing kept happening. Finally, we were forced to buy a new printer because it was cheaper after we spent a fortune on trying to fix the thing. We would have been money ahead if we had just bought a new printer in the first place.
And the manufacturer, of course, less than sympathetic to the
plan. Oh, yeah. They just said that should be that way. So if you have an older, specified year of something and you have parts that can be manufactured on demand, you can get exact duplicates of what should work. In other words, they can manufacture you an OEM replacement, original equipment.
So 3D printing is going to grow, and there's as Rover says in the chat room, you basically make a resin of your device, and then you expose, you know, and it has like small particles of metal in it to give it strength, and then you expose it to something. Either a certain amount of heat or ultraviolet or X-ray or whatever, and that turns it into essentially a chunk of metal.
Right.
Now, that's pretty cool.
Yeah.
Because right now, when you manufacture something using traditional methods, you take a block of something and you cut away
everything
that you don't want. Well, that's very wasteful because you have a big pile of shavings sitting on the floor, as anybody who has a machine shop knows.
Right.
If you could take that material and
use only what you need, yeah,
then you have reduced your supply chain. Also, your manufacturing is very close to your end user instead of making it 3,000 miles away because the labor happens to be cheaper.
Well, it also helps with resources from the point of view that you're only using what you need, so your initial outlay may be less, ultimately.
Alrighty, so what else you got?
One would think. So, you know, lots of new computers are going to end up underneath the Christmas tree this year, I'm quite sure. And as I'm always saying, they require maintenance and supervision. You have to do things. It's sort of like having a car. You know, you have to change oil in your car and buy new tires every once in a while and maintain the thing. And computers are really no different. But one of the things that, you know, our computers are always under some form of assault by malware and that sort of thing. Just some simple things you can do to help keep your computer from getting, you know, unhealthy, if you will. First of all, remove unused software. If you have, software you haven't used for a while, or it's an old version or something like that.
Or maybe it's
hasn't
the crapware
updated,
that came with
yeah,
your computer.
It could be something. Well, some of those you can't take off.
Well,
but
there are ways.
There are ways, yep. So if you remove that unused software, then if it's older, it may have vulnerabilities that can be taken advantage of. And not only that, you just don't need it on your computer anyway. It's kind of can be an overhead hog if you have it start up on your computer and you don't realize it's running anyway. Mm-hmm. Install all the system and software updates. That's really important. And it's a pain in the butt. There's no question about that. I go for a week or so sometimes without turning my laptop on, and I've learned – turn it on and walk away.
Yes.
Let it sit for several hours because it will go through and do updates, and they do them frequently. That's what's so annoying. But it's really important because a lot of times there'll be vulnerabilities discovered and they will send fix-its in those updates that keep you from getting hacked.
Yeah.
Or getting malware in there, your virus detection will be upgraded.
Yeah.
Or maybe there's a bug in a program that's fairly recently been put in. They find some kind of thing that doesn't work so well, and so they'll fix things like that.
Yeah.
So,
especially on Windows 10, you want to do – now, I have a Windows 10 gaming computer. It started out as Windows 7. I upgraded to 10 fairly painlessly. But I have the automatic updates disabled. So once a week, do a full-on restart. Now, we've got a Windows 7 computer here that we're going to be using for our automation system, stripped down to the bare bones. It's the operating system and the automation program. That means that once a week, I have to sweep it. I got to turn it off, restart it, let it download all of the updates, and put them in. So I'm giving up the convenience for a cleaner, leaner, faster running machine.
Well, it's a good idea to do that anyway, because things do get jammed up in there sometimes, no matter what. Programs, there's, you know, little hiccups and things like that. So it's good to do that. And also by doing updates, you may actually improve the performance of your computer as they discover a more efficient ways for a program to work. Another thing to do is a malware scan. That's vital. And you need to do that every once in a while. I'm guilty of not doing as much of that as I should.
Mm-hmm.
And that's an important thing.
Especially with the rise in malware, if you visit certain sites that plants Bitcoin mining or cryptocurrency mining
on your malware machine.
On your machine. So it steals machine cycles.
Right.
And suddenly you may notice that you're slowing down. Last week, a Starbucks in Brazil was discovered that when people would hook up their devices to the Wi-Fi network, it stole about 10 seconds worth of processor time to run a couple of, to run some code for malware mining. Now, that's 10 seconds off your computer, but the malware would stay on and slow you down.
Mm-hmm.
And you multiply that by the number because, you know, open internet, you know, quote, free Wi-Fi is a big deal.
Yep.
In that part of the world because there are no other options. So
my tablet's developed this bad habit of needing to be hit, you know, something a couple times when I'm on the web. Maybe I need to go through and do some kind
possibly.
Of...
Possibly. It sounds like the digitizer isn't responding, which is the thing that registers your touch.
Yeah. It shows that the screen, I get a reaction, but it's not processing it. So I don't know about that. And the number four of five things you can do is back up your system. It's, you know, kind of annoying. That sort of can be an overnight type thing. But there's ways to do regular backups. You can – there's cloud-based services for that, for instance. You can do it on a local hard drive. And it's something that you can do and set to have it run overnight or on a schedule so that you don't really notice it, if you will. It just does its thing at a time maybe when you're not usually using the computer because backups, you know, pretty much have to be – you can't be using the computer while you do a backup most of the time, at least in Mike's experience. So that's a good thing. And finally, maintain a quality anti-malware solution on your system. That comes along with doing a malware scan. So, you know.
And do your homework because don't use Kaspersky. Don't use McAfee. Don't use the crap that came on your computer.
Yeah,
sorry.
It's always some kind of reason that stuff is – on their freebie, they're either mining data or who knows what they're doing, if anything. But it may not be very current. It may not be the best solution. And so it's sort of like maintaining your computer is a little bit like investing. Spread your approach out across different things such as the backup or the malware scans and the updates and that sort of thing. And that's how you keep things healthy and running well. And yeah, it can be a hassle, but, you know, do you want to buy a new computer or get, you know,
squeeze a little more money?
Well, valuable stuff that's on there that's nowhere else in case the malware you get is ransomware. You know, not all of us are in a position to walk away from that information, for instance, and say, fine, whatever. So having backups, secure backups can help you with that.
By the way, you want to check some of the stories and get some more in-depth information on the stories that we cover here on Boomer Tech Radio. You can check the Boomer Tech Radio magazine, download the Flipboard app to your mobile device of choice, subscribe to Boomer Tech Radio, and you'll see the stories that inspire and give us some ideas to talk about here. For example, who do we get this from? From Cult of Mac. What Flipboard is an aggregator. It gathers stories from many different sources and serves them up according to your interests. So,
kind of like Pinterest ideas. Kinda, and there's a whole bunch of things out there that are like that.
But you can make your own magazine that aggregates stuff that you really care about.
Right. Customize it.
The ongoing irritation contest. A shoulder bump contest between Apple and Amazon apparently has settled back just a bit. You can now once again purchase an Apple TV through Amazon. The new 4K box is, I think it's close to $250, if I'm not mistaken.
Hmm.
But it is once again available. And this is a 4K streaming device, lots more memory than the original Apple 4K TV. By the way, speaking of streaming devices, maybe... want to go into that a little bit because we had something the other night. Now,
right.
We have a first-generation Fire Stick. Now, Amazon Fire TV comes in a couple of flavors. They've got a box that's like it's about a 2x2 box. Or there's the stick, which looks like a fat USB drive with a plug on the side of it so you can power it. But it plugs directly into one of the ports on the back of your set. Mid-movie last... The other night, I think, what were we watching? Was it the Great Wall?
Yes.
Is that when it froze up? Yeah.
Yeah.
By the way, absolutely, supremely improbable, fun comic book movie, The Great Wall with Matt Damon. If you like old kung fu movies and the wire work and just pretty outlandish special effects, I love The Great Wall. It was a good escape movie for a couple hours.
Oh, yeah. And what was even more fun is that after seeing the movie, well, we dug out your Cinefex magazine issue on that to look at how they did the sets because that was really quite interesting. Massive
is a
green screen.
Gift for the movie buff in your life.
Oh, yeah.
You can go on, and it's only available for iPad. Sorry, Android users. They only work on iPads. The Cinefex app, and you can buy copies of Cinefex magazine that show up on your tablet in beautiful color with additional content for $5 an episode, for $5 a copy.
Yeah, but you can also get a subscription.
You can get a paper
subscription. It's a hard copy
delivered
to your house. So
beautiful.
That's not the only way to get through it is on an iPad.
And a subscription.
Only digital.
Yeah. A subscription to Cinefex is not cheap, but it is the trade magazine for special effects dating all the way back to the original Star Trek motion picture in the late 1970s.
Yep. It's interesting insights. I used to love that show that was on Discovery, I think, Movie Magic. It was a half-hour show, and they would take movies and they would, in effect, show you that what was done behind the scenes and how they accomplished certain stunts and things like that. It was pretty interesting. I missed that show. That was a lot of fun. And Cinefex magazine is that and more, actually.
By the way, in the chat room, somebody says you might want to look at Clamwin, C-L-A-M-W-I-N, as a anti-malware. Said that Malwarebytes got to be too restrictive and to the point of blocking Google.
Oh, yeah, that is a little restrictive. Much as we love to hate Google, right? Because we love to hate Facebook kind of stuff. Yep.
Let's see here. We got about 6 minutes before the top of the hour. New stuff coming up on Netflix. Nothing I'm seeing that's really getting my blood pumping coming up on Netflix. I'm looking at the story. I'm not seeing anything on Netflix that's really getting my blood pumping right now. Although it comes and goes.
Well, they so far in what they've done have a track record of producing some pretty well done shows.
Yeah.
And so.
But we do maintain a Netflix because it's basically held over from the days where you're getting DVDs in the mailbox. Does anybody still do that? I imagine some people must. But as much as possible, Netflix has gone to pushing out content. What I find hard is actually finding things on Netflix because, of course, and this was the big irritation I had with the HBO Now app, is the difficulty in actually finding something.
Right. And if you're looking for something in particular, and of course, not all media content is available on one of these things. I've been looking for the old television show, the Western, the Virginian, and apparently no one has the license to that original one. There's a new one.
You can buy the DVD set.
Right, you can do that, but that's not the same as being able to stream it.
And I know why it doesn't exist, but I wish it did. I wish there was a central clearinghouse for, I'm looking for this movie, who is carrying it? Wouldn't that be nice?
But
there's
that industry thing you used to be able to look at in the video stores. You could look up an artist or the name of a movie and see who was in it, but you could look up an artist.
Well,
and
there's IMDb.
Yeah, IMDb. That's what
Internet Movie Database.
So you would think that they could add that to
it. It would be
so
nice
easily.
If IMDb, actually listed who was carrying a particular movie available for streaming. But they're not, and I think that has to do with they're all not wanting to talk to each other. Oh, just subscribe and see what you get. Sort of. We have to read it before we know what's in it. We have to pass it before we'll know what's in it.
Yeah, some of these things are relatively archaic. Of course, keeping up that database is a nightmare, but they do it anyway. So what's the difference when you add that element to the information in the database? So, whatever. Someday maybe there needs to be an app for that.
Yeah. corrected in the chat room, Clamwin. Now, there's a difference between an antivirus and an anti-malware.
True.
And it's a subtle difference, but it's important. Now, I have AVG, which is kind of a combination package. AVG used to be my go-to for antivirus software, and then they got a little kludgy, a little greedy, a little little slow me down too much. We have a guy who works on computers here at this station who swears by Komodo, C-O-M-O-D-O, swears by that one. It just whatever is working well on your configuration, there is no one best antivirus. There are some that I'll say I will never touch again, a la Kaspersky and McAfee and things like that, because they're harvesting data and slowing you down and, in some cases, blocking off stuff completely. So that's another thing. What about deals being made for your antivirus to shut down a particular movie service? You know, you don't know. You can't tell. Why it's not working? Why is it not working? You got to blame the movie service.
So along that line, what's the difference between antivirus and anti-malware? Malware and viruses, of course, are major problems on computers, and they're somewhat used interchangeably, but they're not exactly that way. A malware is software that performs an unwanted task, and a virus is a specific type of malware that replicates and infects to other computer programs. Mm-hmm. So,
yeah, a virus, it does
so antivirus between. Versus anti-malware they do different things, and so you have to have different reactions to that. So antivirus is often used interchangeably with anti-malware, but antivirus software targets specific subset of malware, and antivirus became a popular term in the 90s with all of that. And then anti-malware is a type of software that's installed directly on a computer, is used to actively detect and remove malware from the system. So you're right. It's a very subtle difference, but they do different things.
And we are coming up towards the top of our first hour here on Boomer Tech Radio. We'll take a break for the news and then come back with more of the tech news that you can use right after this break. It's Boomer Tech Radio. We will be back. And it's hour two of Boomer Tech Radio Broadcast Podcast. Hello, once again, I'm Bob Belongi.
And I'm Brenda Belongi.
Analog Living, Digital World, live today, 530-605-4567. Hop in the chat room, kcnr1460.com. Drop an email, boomertechradio@gmail.com. You've just got so many ways. It's easy to get hold of us. We don't make it difficult. It's unlike your bank,
which may not even be open on weekends.
And you listen to that horrible music loop for how many hours?
Oh yeah, that sort of thing.
We're sorry. We're busy helping all of our other customers.
Kind of in the be afraid, be very afraid category. I just love the tech stories.
Oh, yeah.
That they annoy me.
Yeah.
So the state of California Health Department.
Oh,
says,
yes, those helpful people.
Yes, says that they're warning against the hazards of cell phone radiation this week, even though there's no confirmed or concrete evidence that this is a problem. So why are they making a big deal out of this? This is annoying. So they are asking people to decrease their use of the devices. Ha ha, like that's going
to
happen.
I'm going to point something out here. In 2009, what was the cell phone of choice? It was a flip phone that you held right next to your head. Am I right?
Mm-hmm.
You held it like a conventional phone.
Right.
We don't use our phones like that very much anymore. We text. We send out messages. And when we talk, more often than not, we put someone on speaker, don't we? Or we might use an earbud. But we don't use our phones the same way that we used to. So the 2009 study that purports a increase in potential tumors, and the veracity of the study is in question, is using an outmoded information, in my opinion.
Well, that certainly is a problem. So one has to look at the, source of the data and how it's used and how the study was doing. And so this is what exactly the report that this is all based on. And the cell phone manufacturers, you know, they don't want any kind of liability here. So there's no standards developed for safety limits and all that sort of thing. So this is one of these things that I just find annoying reporting because there's no substance here.
Yeah.
There's nothing concrete. There's no –
There's fear.
Right. That's all they're doing is selling this fear on that. Does that mean that you should, wallow in this stuff? Probably not, mm-hmm. Because we don't know. But how long have cell phones been around? Close to 20 years now? Or a little close enough, right?
Yeah, and I'm putting this in the same category with – and I know a person this way. Refuses to use a microwave oven because the radiation stays in the food.
That's bad science.
No. What you get in a microwave oven, what you get from your cell phone, what you get from your Wi-Fi router is what is called non-ionizing radiation. It doesn't strip the electrons off of the atoms in your body.
You got more problems from cosmic radiation.
Can it cause tissue heating? Possibly.
Well, the person who put their poodle in the microwave to dry it. I don't know if that's a true story or not. Yeah. That's an urban legend probably, but I should look that one up. Yeah. But it's just these maybe, what ifs, whatever, whatever. Yeah, yeah. So cell phones have been around 20-some years, and we're not seeing any kind of anecdotal evidence yet that there is a problem with this. Yeah. That isn't to say that there couldn't be something developing.
Right.
And it will take decades for it to show up. But I like to use the speaker on my phone because I don't want to hold the thing up to my ear all the time.
Yeah, you get all sweaty,
just really
and
annoying.
Nasty, especially around here where it gets hot.
Or you got to look something up, something on your calendar or whatever while you're talking to a person. So using earbuds that are wired, not Bluetooth ones, because Bluetooth have radio
small
waves with them.
Small amounts of radiation.
Right. Probably less than the phone does, but still. And how much time does your phone spend in transmit mode versus receive mode? There's possibly a little difference there.
Bottom line is, if you wanted to avoid all electromagnetic radiation, you better build yourself a house that is really a Faraday cage.
Yeah.
And never, ever come out. Well, that's not going to work.
Right. Yes. Because the universe gives
relocate the Hat Creek where they put the
– Well, the universe gives us some form of radiation all the time, whether we want it or not.
Cosmic radiation,
yeah,
baby.
Yeah. So I'm just kind of like, but I wouldn't get too excited about this just yet.
We don't use our phones the way we used them in 2009. We simply don't.
Well, does holding it in your hand count as a problem as well?
Here again, I haven't heard of a vast increase in the number of third
tumors
eyes popping
in
up on
your
hand and things like that.
I don't know.
That tissue is relatively, safe. Now, if it's a pregnant woman with a developing baby inside, would I suggest having a cell phone right next to the baby bump? No, because we don't know absolutely for sure if there is a problem or not. Let us err a little bit on the side of caution. You have to take a measure of the risk versus benefit. Holding my phone in my hand, reading the screen, having it on a belt rather than in a pocket. I carry mine in a belt pouch. Am I increasing my risk? Possibly. Am I increasing my risk to a level that is unacceptable to me? There's the key. Is that level of risk unacceptable to me at the current time? No. And so that's a choice you have to make.
Right.
And I get irritated with the busybodies who say, oh, no, we have to panic, and pass laws that really have no substance, no scientific backing.
While we're on the subject of, be afraid, be very afraid, ran across this article about how identity thieves could use leaked Equifax data to have surgery and do other things on your dime. And so this can be a very serious thing because what the Equifax hack could have led to your personally identifiable information getting out there, address, social security number, and all of these things.
Well, something like this happened to you.
Yeah, but it wasn't quite that bad. The worst I got was when I moved from Oregon to Montana, and I kept getting these calls from a bill collector about a phone bill.
I thought there was some medical thing that popped up.
Oh, there was. Yeah. Somebody tried to send me a bill from Texas. I've never set foot on ground in Texas. I've flown over it, but I've never been there on the ground. Anyway, it was really interesting, these things. But the phone company, you know, bill collector kept harassing me, and I said, look, I pay my bills.
Ain't
look
me.
At the record. Yeah. He goes, well, what's your social security number? And I said, well, not that you have a right to it, but here it is. He goes, long pause. Oh, well, that is substantially different than the one I had. I said, told you, get off my back. Goodbye.
Yeah.
Anyway, the kinds of things that can be done with your stolen information, as most people should know, is thieves can open financial accounts. They can apply for credit in your name. They can get access to medical information or impersonate you that way, and bills will be sent to you. Steal your government benefits like Social Security and all this sort of thing. You know, and this is a thing where older folks who aren't used to this and don't have computer access and things like that could really be affected. And to protect your Social Security account so that they don't start redirecting your payments to themselves, if you open a My Social Security account, that should prevent them from being able to get in and do that. And I haven't done that. I maybe should go in and do that. I do know that when Social Security numbers are stolen and people are actually paying into Social Security, the government knows when your account is being used. They just don't tell you.
Yeah.
And you don't get any more than you've actually put in. It's not like it's to your benefit, and because this is millions of dollars that goes into the government coffers.
What is up with that?
I know. So you can't even get a new deal. That's kind of a pain in the butt. There's monitoring services if you can afford them to keep track on these things. And it's a pain in the butt. But, you know, make sure that you check your financial accounts fairly frequently. You can put free fraud alerts on your accounts. If you want to freeze your Equifax or TransUnion or what's the third one? I can't ever remember.
I want to say TMI, but that's not
whatever. Yeah. Sometimes that's a pain in the butt, and sometimes they require you to pay a fee for that. It may be an annual fee.
Yeah.
Used to be like $10 for a year or something like that. I mean, why should I have to pay that, lock it up? Yeah. Or maybe it's TransUnion. I forget. Yeah, I can't ever remember all of these ones. And I'm not very good with that sort of thing. But at any rate, you do have some ways, but it requires you to be vigilant, as most of these things do, and you should be anyway, but it can be a bit of work. So anything that's suspicious, I'm not a fan of a big corporate bank that particularly that we have accounts with, but their fraud department is excellent.
Yep.
If there's purchases made on the credit card that are out of character, it just doesn't make sense, they will contact us directly, and that's pretty nice. So those kinds of things, you can make sure you work on that. But my philosophy is not a matter of if, it's when.
Our bank has been pretty diligent about letting us know when something hokey has happened to our account.
So it's investigated if you think you've been, a victim of the Equifax data breach. If something seems fishy, pursue it. Don't wait either. Yeah. Keep an eye on stuff. Particularly in the holiday season when, people are purchasing a lot of stuff online and that sort of thing. If they've set up a credit account in your name, then you could be on the hook for that.
Can begin. I like to say about this show that we live in the age of science fiction, and we have reached a point where a private company launching a rocket into suborbital space doesn't even blip. nobody notices.
it's just assumed.
It's routine. It's right, a daily thing.
It's assumed to be possible. It's assumed to be happening.
Last week, Blue Origin launched a capsule, an unmanned capsule, as part of their testing program. They released a video giving a hint at what customers will be able to expect from the space tourism company once it starts giving regular rides. The video shows a dummy taking a ride into space in the Blue Origin capsule that eventually they want to have people on board. Now, the neat thing about the Blue Origin capsule is that traditional spacecraft have little teeny tiny portholes that you peep out of, and because obviously it's a structural integrity thing. Well, the Blue Origin capsule has these huge picture windows on
it. Yeah, so like the size of an airplane. They're bigger, actually.
Yeah,
they're larger.
They're actually a couple of feet across. Now, that would give me some pause because in the event of a catastrophic failure of the window, it's goodnight, Irene. But there's a lot of things that can go wrong on one of these rides. But that having been said, if this was within my reach and I'm not of an age where I couldn't do this physically, you bet your bottom I would do this once as a bucket list. Not likely. Not terribly likely. The dummy who was sent up with measurement instrumentation and all that stuff was named Mannequin Skywalker.
That's pretty clever. Now, geeks do not have any sense of humor? Come on. That's clever.
The flight was 11 minutes in length. Blue Origin sees the mission. SpaceX wants to take people to Mars and beyond, be heavy into the lifting industry. Blue Origin just wants to be a quick ride up to high enough to, I think it's 60 miles, see the curvature of the Earth, experience weightlessness during the top of the ride, and then safely return. And that is what the Blue Origin vehicle will do. And so there's
Disney
a great.
Go ahead.
Blue Origin has a video if you want to check YouTube. Mannequin Skywalker, and then you can pull it up on YouTube.
So Disney used to have e-ticket rides.
Oh, yeah.
How far down the alphabet does this ride go?
Yeah, well, there was an early ride there at called Mission to Mars, where it was a. And they simulated acceleration, things like that, by having the seat move underneath you. But to actually experience full-on weightlessness, even for a few minutes, how cool is that? And to see the planet from that vantage point. How very cool. So the social network that everybody loves to hate is taking more heat.
You know, when you're the juggernaut that Facebook is, of course you're going to get picked on.
Yeah. Now, even some of the people who helped found Facebook say, you know, people are spending a whole lot of their time seeing what other people are up to and seeing the successes their friends have and the beautiful things that happen to their friends. Then there's people who just vent way too much nonsense.
Well, so Facebook says it's not healthy for you to not post stuff. That's just crazy. But it's along that line as you're seeing lovely things being said or done by other people, and you're not doing that.
Yeah.
And so that's just bad for your health. I don't know. There's been a lot of research done on this about social media and how it affects people's self-esteem and their perception of what's going on in the world. But really, I think it's just Facebook trying to get more Facebook
people. Yeah, 2015 study at the University of Michigan found that students who simply read Facebook posts for 10 minutes were in a worse mood by the end of the day than test subjects who posted messages or commented on friends' posts. Yeah.
I'm not sure I agree with that.
I use Facebook to promote this program and check on a few friends, and that's about it. I do not have it on my phone because it eats your battery. We have a call. That's the beauty of doing the show live. We have David on the line. David, welcome to Boomer Tech.
Oh, yeah, hi. You know, paying attention to the news the other day, the net neutrality ruling that the FCC did.
Yeah.
I wanted to ask you kind of a scientific question, and then I guess see if the conversation goes from there. If I understand right, electricity runs about as close to the speed of light as it can get. So in order to slow down the Internet, somebody would have to put in some sort of a buffer or a reducer. They'd have to install some kind of equipment that would slow down electricity. And then, as such, to be able to sell you a faster service, they would have had to sabotage you to begin with, and then you're getting you're forced to pay more to get what might be seen as your birthright.
Well,
am I getting it right? That they have to put in. Do they call them limiters?
It doesn't precisely work that way. Let me. The Internet is based on IP protocol, which breaks down the data into what are called packets. Think about, do you remember stories about how they used to fight fires with what was called a bucket brigade?
Well, sure.
You didn't
yeah.
have hoses, you didn't have pumps, you didn't have everybody. There'd be somebody filling up a bucket out of a stream, and they would pass it to the next person, and the next person, and the next person. And say we were fighting four different fires. Well, at some point, the bucket would go from line A to line B, and then on to the fire, and so on. That's pretty much how the Internet works. In this case, the bucket has a tag on it that says, this goes to fire A. And so it is passed from node to node, from computer to computer, you know, until it reaches its destination. Now, let's take that a step further and say that fire A has gotten bigger, so it needs more attention. So we put more tags directing the water to fire A. And fire C over here just sort of gets ignored. That's sort of what's happening with net neutrality. Instead, so a certain destination, a certain ad, and I'm really oversimplifying it. But no, the speed of light is pretty constant. The electricity is pretty constant. In fact, it's a limiting factor in how good our computers work. But what they are doing is actually some traffic is held in a buffer longer than others, or it goes at a slow, it is passing the packets at a slower rate of pass through. That's yeah. essentially how
well,
what throttling
the,
is.
It's the same thing then as, like in other words, in order to do that, they would have to build a storage system so that,
it's already there.
Your stuff would be stored for later.
It's already
and,
there.
And then, as such, they would intentionally have to build a smaller series of pipes, so to speak. In other words, if AT&T wanted to offer service, they should be, offer service to the demographics of that region. And they would know in advance how many people have telephone lines, videos, you know, all of the different usage of the Internet. So they would intentionally build it down. They would build it smaller so that they could then squeeze you off. They
well,
would have to build
sort of
storage to park it for later, but they would also have to build it smaller rather than what the planned need for.
Well, I don't think it quite works
well,
that way.
Yeah,
Bob's analogy of the bucket brigade is good. All buckets move at the same speed. It's just, how quickly are they delivered? In other words, it's sort of like priority mail versus parcel post. They all go through the same system, but it might, one packet may stall out here for a while, and then when it does move, it moves the same rate as everything else, but how everything catches up then is at a different pace. So it's not the speed of electricity that they're yeah. messing with.
Now, here's an interesting test if you want to check your internet connection. There are several sites, and the one that I like to use is speakeasy.net, speakeasy.net, and it actually will tell you the relative speed of your internet connection, and more often, and it will show you that your speed of stuff coming down is much slower than the speed going up. Asymmetrical connections are pretty much what everybody gets. For example, our connection here at this radio station is 30 megabits a second, last time I checked, downhill. But pushing data back up into the Internet is more down around the lines of about 10 megabits per second. That has nothing to do with the speed of light. It has everything to do with how rapidly those packets are passed along.
Correct.
Well, I thought that had to do with when you sign up for your phone system or your Internet system, it's usually through your phone company, that you contract for, as you're describing, a 75% down, 25% up. That would be your 30-10 breakdown, right? So you tell the phone system that you'd buy a package at 75-25. And most people don't produce content. They usually download stuff.
Right. Absolutely.
So, that gets into what they build in to begin with. But, again, the whole idea that they're – see, what I'm looking at is whether or not these the server companies or the providers, if you want to call them that, that they're in that this refusal to offer net neutrality, they have to spend money to screw you. And that doesn't seem like a market forces idea.
Yeah, not really, because guess who they make pay for it? So they're not spending anything.
And I think
they'll overcharge you to compensate for what they designed in to screw you.
Well, it'll be interesting.
If you're describing that they have to park it somewhere to send it later, then that means that they have to build in a storage system to be able to screw
there.
You.
It's already there.
It's sort of like cars in a line.
It's how fast. It's how all you'd have to do is change a couple of lines of code. When you upgrade your service, they don't put in bigger, fatter wires. They change a line of code that says how fast your packets get moved through. That's all they do.
It's sort of like traffic.
Well, right. So that's another version of saying that they have to build in a system to be able to slow it down to begin with.
Yeah. All right. Well, it's just like, now I know people who drive a boat with two speeds, full throttle or none at all. Hi, Carl. and I know people who drive that way, too. But are these companies going to throttle? I think, but I don't think it's going to be quite the Armageddon that some people – people love Armageddon scenarios.
The consumer won't tolerate it.
Yeah, consumers won't tolerate it.
The market itself
will. Well, I'm thinking also, if you think about people down in Houston last summer with that big hurricane hitting, and, you know, their telephone lines got washed out with the immediate rainstorm. It knocked a lot of power lines down. So the Wi-Fi systems were up. Now, if this net neutrality thing was abandoned and they put everything on market forces, then in a disaster, the fallback positions, you might get your message, you know, you're sending out an SOS. Our neighborhood is being flooded. Help, help, help. And you're saying that they could send your package later? Your SOS would show up maybe 3 weeks late?
I don't know if that's a scenario, but it's an interesting way. Hey, David, we are way past our bottom of the hour break. Hey, thank you very much.
Yeah, it seems like they're selling out our birthright.
All right. Thank you very much.
Sure.
Is internet a basic human right? Interesting question. Boomer Tech Radio, more after this. And we're back with Boomer Tech Radio, the tech news you can use. Goodies, gadgets, and gizmos. And David brought up some interesting points with his call about net neutrality. The infrastructure is already there. As he was talking about, why would they build these places to store the data? It's not quite that simple. The internet's sort of like a railroad, and the sidings are already there. And if you want to carry that a little further, the packets are like cars in a freight train. And every freight car has on the side of it a great big barcode. You've seen that. You notice that the taggers leave that alone? I think that's an agreement.
Yeah, they kind
with
of
the railroad people that they can paint all over the car but leave the barcode alone.
Yep. That's definitely something they need to do.
Interesting agreement. But the barcode, a particular freight car with a particular cargo may move between five or six different trains while it's getting
before
from
it gets to
point
its destination.
A to point, to its destination. That's kind of the way the internet works on a whole lot faster scale. Every packet of information has a header on it, where it's from, who it's going to, the approximate length, and a checksum in case something gets garbled up with the data. And it's all in relatively small packets, but there's a whole bunch of them. So slowing stuff down means that certain packets will get passed through at two times the rate or three times the rate. They're not really being held, and you're not changing the speed of light. It's all in how long something sits on a particular server before it is moved forward. Same as, when you're streaming a video, your internet connection isn't fast enough for most of us to real-time stream high-definition video. That's why you get the little stops and starts. So what your device does is that it has a certain amount of buffer memory, and that's when you see the little clock thingy on your screen.
Right.
As the movie is loading ahead, so that as it plays, it has enough buffer to keep refilling so that the tank never runs dry.
The incoming is outpacing the play, or the part that's here already is ahead of where you are.
And sometimes if your connection slows down, by the way, if your streaming starts stuttering and doing stuff like that, at least once a week, unplug your router and let it sit for 10 minutes, plug it back in, and that will reset a lot of things inside the router, and your performance might increase. We have to do that about once, about once a month or so we end up doing that, out of frustration.
Well, it's part of that maintenance routine, right?
Yeah. All righty. There's something on the chat room about a joke and coin values, and I'm not going to sit here. I'll have to look at it here in just a minute. We were benching about Facebook taking a lot of heat for being an antisocial network because people who spend too much time staring at the Facebook get depressed.
Right.
And I've never really felt that.
I don't either, but we're not of a generation that grew up with Facebook either. That's not how we have our core relationships, is through social media. We're more face-to-face people. And Facebook admits that Facebook makes you feel bad. So it's like, what? We know we make you feel bad, but you should use it anyway. What is up with that?
Yeah.
Most of the research that's gone into this is looking at teenagers and very young people who are finding their way in the world and you know, whatever teenagers do deciding their self-worth and things like that and where their place is. Yeah. But, you know, get kids involved in other things,
The fact is I spent more of my life without it than with it.
Right. So a real quick thing, I got annoyed the other day on my new tablet that whenever I came across a video on Facebook, or I came across the video on the news stream or whatever, that it would autoplay.
Oh, yeah.
And so Chrome Rover, now –
hold on. We want to cover this real quick before we go to you. Okay, go ahead.
Chrome allows you now to more easily control auto updates, because it used to be kind of buried in that sort of thing. Also stop malicious redirects and do more things. So Chrome 64 beta allows users to easily mute autoplaying videos across an entire website, not just whatever. And then there's some new settings coming up, and check that out, because that is quite annoying with these things.
I have heard
things.
Sometimes when the staff in here, the morning crew in here, has their computers going, they'll hit an autoplay video.
Yep.
And it'll just blah out here.
You're in a meeting or something like that, and it's like, oh, yeah, that's not so good. Anyway.
Yeah, that earns you the look.
Help is on the way. Yes, and it means you're not paying attention to what it was you were supposed to be paying attention to.
Let's hop on the phone. Longtime listener, Rover.
Hey, welcome to the program, and long time no hear. We try to do it live a little bit more nowadays.
Yeah, I know. Kind of with the net neutrality, another way you can look at it is, okay, cars on a superhighway. You know, again, they're, you know, all identical cars. You know, they might have the barcodes or they're color-coded. Well, with net neutrality, what can happen is that 8-lane superhighway can become a 2-lane highway going to wherever.
Yeah, have you ever been to Mexico?
Nope.
Okay, if you go into Mexico, you have two roads running side by side. You have the national highway, and every couple of miles on the national highway, you have to stop and pay the toll. And for that toll, you get the smooth road, and you get the highway assistance. They have what they call the Green Angels, who patrol the road. If you do not wish, as most of the population down there does not wish, to pay for that toll road, you're over on the dirt road that passes through the individual villages and barrios. And I've done that just to check that road out. And it takes you about four times as long. And you have varying conditions of road and you get a lot of strange look from people.
The express bus versus the local.
Yeah, exactly. Right. So that's kind of the analogy there.
But, you know, kind of help the gentleman that called earlier about net neutrality.
Yeah, we haven't forgotten.
Basically, what that's going to allow the ISPs to do is to limit your traffic, how fast you get stuff, how fast you upload, where you can go. Example, you know, they could say, well, we don't want you to go to Google. So they can put in a block on Google.
They can. Whether they would, I doubt highly. Yeah. Because the backlash
would be memorable. I doubt it too, but I'm just using that as the example. or, you know, not, you know, promote it, but they could actually block ports going to your computer so you can't use things like, okay, example, email.
Yep.
You know, they can actually
have to use our service, yeah.
Right. And you know, using, okay, example, Thunderbird to go to Gmail, they could actually go in and block those ports, so the only way you can get Gmail is through the web browser.
Yeah, well, Thunderbird died a natural death from market competition. But your point is taken.
Yeah. Well, I've got a lot of email accounts, you know, and I just use the web because, you know, I don't have an ISP account. You know, my roommate, it's his account, so, and I'm not going to get attached to it that way.
Yeah. Gmail has become pretty much a universal account. Do you put up with a lot of intrusion? Yeah, not too bad, but...
No, I don't. You know, I use it a lot. I also have, Yahoo, MSN's Hotmail.
Well, those are blasts from the past.
Yeah. And I still have one that has a three-letter password.
You know, if you have, by the way, folks, if you have an old Yahoo account that you just can't let go of, change the password, please. And of course, I'll mention this once again, and see if Rover agrees with me here, our preferred method of a password is a phrase that means something to you. Maybe your favorite movie, maybe the first place you went out on a date to, could have been your first pet. You write that all down, strung together, and then you substitute symbols and numbers for particular letters, or maybe you capitalize every third letter, something that's easy to remember but almost impossible to hack. Would you agree with that, Rover?
It works. You could also go to grc.com/passwords, and you can generate up to a 64 alphanumeric password, or hexadecimal, or even ones with symbols.
Right, but that's impossible to remember, and now you've got to write it down somewhere or use a password keeper.
Actually, what we do, we do our Wi-Fi that way. We've got it on a USB drive, you know, in a plain text file, so when someone comes to visit, they want to use the Wi-Fi.
Just don't lose that drive.
Well, I've got it backed up.
Yeah. But, I'm just thinking of what our method is for somebody who doesn't want to keep it written down and doesn't want to keep it on a drive. That's a pretty tough-to-crack password method. Somebody would have to have a lot of pieces. Don't use your birthday. Don't use your anniversary. Don't use publicly available information. But
you
some
know, like
piece of...
Well, and definitely don't use your Social Security number.
Oh, yeah, or your driver's license number, as I have seen. All righty. Hey, Rover, you know, you've been a listener of this show, and you have a lot of tech shows you listen to. We do appreciate it, let me tell you.
Well, with what I've been doing lately, I haven't had time to listen.
Oh, well, we hope you
Today I decided I was going to take a little time and listen to a couple of them.
Well, we're glad you did.
We're very glad you did. Thank you very much, sir.
Well, if I don't catch you next week, happy holidays to you and yours.
Well, we thank you very much, sir. Have a great day.
Same
all
to
right,
you.
Bye-bye.
Longtime listener Rover, who actually has a program that downloads all these tech shows. So he can listen to him at his leisure. So he listens to, you know, Laporte, and he listens to all these, you know, probably Grumpy Old Geeks and those guys, which I have listened to the Grumpy Old Geeks podcast. And you know what? Their style is their style, but they're a little heavy on the snark, don't you think? Didn't you,
yeah,
didn't you find it that
they're
way?
Also very...
Every other word is the F-bomb.
Well, and they you have to be an insider.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, they don't teach much unless you're really into tech at a level that a lot of us are not.
Yeah. And, you know, like Commando wants to fix your computer and sell her products to fix your computer.
Well, fixing the computer, that, you know, that is helpful. That's news you can use for sure. We try not to do too much of that here because there's so many possibilities.
Oh, yeah. So, let me see here. I kind of got discombobulated here.
Well, we got a little room left in the show.
From Forbes. Now, we've heard about blockchain technology being a non-duplicatable chain of ownership technology, whereas a digital asset cannot be duplicated without it being obvious. Is the easiest way to put it. That's why cryptocurrencies work. But that same technology could be used for healthcare. Because let's put this out there. One of the big problems in healthcare is laboratory samples.
Sure.
Being misrouted or the results lost.
Right, or attached to the wrong person or what have you. Sure.
Or they cut off the wrong leg.
Well, ouch.
Literally.
Oh, yeah, that
is
happened.
In operating rooms, they
medical
write
mistakes.
On the person's, like, take this one.
Yeah.
In not a Sharpie, but something. They write on the leg.
Yeah.
Because some of these doctors, by the time they get done, have done, you know, some of these surgeons have done 16-hour days. And this is not where you want a little mental lapse.
No.
So blockchain technology is finding its way into medical research and treatment through artificial intelligence, machine learning. So these databases actually have traceable, identifiable chains of data that are not dependent upon a single server. So blockchain is actually dependent on a distributed web of computers rather than a single system that can be hacked and compromised. And that's the difference, the big difference there between the two, is that blockchain is a universal ledger that everybody gets to. We talk about transparency. Mm-hmm. Well, everybody who is part of that network looks at the ledger. And this is all happening millions of times per second, of course. But if there is a discrepancy, they work it out. Okay, this value does not agree with 99 other people's values, so this value must be in error. So a hacker would have a very tough time of committing a fraud. So this is what they call a disruptive technology. In other words, the nightmare scenarios where the hospitals get hit with a ransomware.
Right.
And it locks them down and they can't do it. And so they pony up the money.
Right.
If their stuff is spread out over a large, diffuse network where nobody has all of the apples.
Right.
Then it becomes very resistant to an attack.
Right. It's an interesting idea and how to keep information safer, if you will, from being abused. So the Equifax thing that we were talking about earlier, if this sort of thing had been in place, perhaps that information would have been much more difficult to steal. It's kind of the same idea, right?
Yeah. Interesting article here. This comes to us courtesy of Forbes magazine. We feed it through the Boomer Tech Radio app. That is on your Flipboard. If you don't have Flipboard, get it. It's on iOS. It's on Android devices. Really, really good app. Let's look here quickly. Tech products. This is from the website PopSugar. tech products you're going to be obsessed with in 2018. Now, we're going to miss out on the 2018 CES.
Which there's already stories starting about what's going to be there.
Yeah, yeah.
OLED versus QLED versus whatever. Televisions apparently are a big thing.
And more insights into VR, AR, artificial intelligence, smart devices. And let's face it, some of them were downright silly. The artificially intelligent tea maker, you know, was
that was so amusing. It's like solved a problem that you didn't have.
Yeah, yeah. I was like, say what?
Oh, my goodness. All right. So tech products that we're going to be obsessed with, I don't know. There's
All righty. So the P-Cube Smart Boy Android Phone Game Boy console transforms your phone into an old-school game with it's a $78 add-on that clips over your phone and makes your phone into a handheld gaming device.
Need a housekeeper? The iRobot Roomba. Wi-Fi connected. Vacuuming robot. I'd have to get all the junk off the floor in my house for this to even work very well. So, but, you know, more and more people.
I know
have
people
them.
Who have them, yeah. And they love them.
Yeah, it would be nice.
And their cats love them.
You still got to, or hate them. It just depends. You still have to empty the thing, of course. Now, if we get a Roomba that would empty itself, that would be even cooler.
Wi-Fi, wireless speaker. For use in the shower, the Anthropology,
yes.
Splash Tunes dual wireless speaker is $44. It's got a very pretty package on it. You recharge it through the USB port when you're not in the shower. So if you just can't wait to hear your tunes and you're annoying your loved one by having the radio cranked up in the bathroom, this thing sits in the shower stall and gives you music on the go.
There's a company called H&M. They have in-ear headphones that are apparently pretty good for about $30, which sounds kind of expensive for earbuds. But on the other hand, my Skull Candies that I like are in that retail price range, and they are pretty good. I didn't know I had this problem. Brookstone Dustin Jr., set of three cleaning claws attached to your cheek cane, and if your screen gets a little dirty, you can just swipe off your screen with
what
that.
What keeps
which
it
is,
from getting filthy as it's rolling around in your pocket is the question.
Yeah, I know. That's one of those
You'd
things.
Have to have it.
Oh. I know.
This is, okay, I wish we had video on this because it's a set of headphones.
Look it up. Another Brookstone thing.
The Brookstone Bluetooth Ariana Grande cat headphone. You have to pull this up on the web because we're just dying here looking at this thing.
I'm shaking my head with my jaw hanging open.
Picture a pair of white headphones with little pink speakers built into a set of cat ears attached to the top of the headphones.
Yeah. I don't know. Well, I don't know as the speakers
are
up there because
right.
they have headphones.
You can have these for a mere $130.
On sale from $150.
Oh, my goodness.
Yep. Fitbit has a device or a model, the Fitbit Alta
HR,
I guess, heart rate. That stands for heart rate, I think. Wristband smartwatch. You know, Fitbit's always reinventing these things to tell us that we need a Fitbit thing. And most people that use Fitbits use them for a while and then they don't, which is interesting.
If you have an iPhone, you may want to look at the Felony Case holographic iPhone case for $30. Holographic, it actually gives you that shimmering color effect of a Surface hologram.
I guess. I don't know why that's so important. Another thing from Anthropology. Solar portable charger. This thing kind of snaps onto your keychain. Gosh, I can't say it right.
Cheeky.
Yeah. But it doesn't say here how much power it will deliver over time. But it does recharge solar recharging. The one thing in here that kills me is, I lost track. My touchscreen and I are doing crazy things today. Is that there is a cell phone cleaner, I think.
Oh, yeah, the phone soap smartphone sanitizer.
Yeah, that uses
$50.
UV.
Blasts your phone with ultraviolet light.
It keeps the germs off of it, but it doesn't keep the dirt. UV is not noted for cleaning dirt off of things.
By the way, real quick, it is a tech device that we have decided that we use. If you are one of those hundreds of thousands of people who uses a CPAP. We've been using now a CPAP mask cleaner for the last several months. And Brenda, your impression so far?
The thing works.
Yeah.
It's So Clean happens to be the brand name of that. That's not an endorsement. It's just our experience.
Yeah. Pumps ozone through the system. So
ozone,
you don't
yeah.
want to be breathing this stuff. But it does keep the nasties from growing in your phone. Well, that is, we've hit the end of another show. It's Boomer Tech Radio, boomertechradio.com. If you missed part of this, you can go pick it up off the archives at kcnr1460.com. Drop us an email, boomertechradio@gmail.com. Bob and Brenda saying, wherever you go, whatever you do, be safe and be good to each other.